From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, taxes and tax reform are the likely topics in New York's next legislative session. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on a major settlement for the state with J.P. Morgan Chase, and will take you to a forum in the North Country on the controversial Common Core requirements. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Taxes and tax reform are likely to be the major topic in the next legislative session, which begins in 7 weeks. Governor Cuomo is relying on two separate commissions for ideas about tax changes, while progressive groups and Republicans in the state Senate are also weighing in. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
A coalition of progressive groups says the coming tax debate should focus on income inequality. Michael Kink with Strong Economy for All says New York has the largest gap between rich and poor in the nation, with child poverty rates as high as 50% in many cities. And he says the groups will evaluate the ideas coming out of two tax commissions appointed by Governor Cuomo, as well as from the state legislature, with this in mind.
Every single proposal that the legislature considers can be judged through this lens of whether it makes inequality better or worse.
Ron Deutsch with New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness says a Siena poll this week found that people in the state do care about tax cuts. They list that as well as education as their chief priorities. He says the two are not mutually exclusive.
We can have real tax reform that addresses both of those issues, that adequately funds education and provides some tax relief to people who need it the most.
The groups say in order to provide tax cuts for the middle and working classes, the wealthy and corporations need to pay more, and some of that money should be used to help the state's schools. The groups say they're encouraged by New York City Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio's recent campaign. De Blasio wants a higher tax rate for New Yorkers making over $500,000 a year. He'd use the money to pay for pre-kindergarten programs. Governor Cuomo says he wants tax cuts in 2014, the year he faces re-election.
I believe we're going to have revenue at the end of this year that we can be talking about a tax cut next year, and I think that's very exciting.
Cuomo has said he thinks he can work something out with the new mayor, but he did not commit to raising taxes to fund more preschools. The governor is relying on two tax commissions for new ideas. The first, appointed 2 years ago, quietly released a report that recommends, among other things, eliminating the sales tax on clothing worth less than $110 and imposing a tax on digital services like iTunes and Netflix. Cuomo also appointed a tax commission led by former Governor George Pataki, a Republican, and former Democratic State Controller Carl McCall. They are charged with finding a way to reduce New York's highest in the nation property taxes. They'll report back shortly before the new legislative session begins. Meanwhile, Republicans in the state Senate released their plan for tax reform. It includes reductions in the income tax for all levels of earners and a cut in the corporate tax rate. Deutsch, with New Yorkers for Fiscal Fairness, says the progressive groups will target key senators to try to get them to sign on to their plan for tax reform instead.
The movement in New York City for income inequality and fair taxation is going to spread all across the state, and that's exactly what we're looking at doing. We're going to be going out into different Senate districts. We're going to be organizing, mobilizing people to take action.
New York already has a tax surcharge on the wealthy. It's been imposed for the past several years, and the current version continues until 2017. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Scharr. Talked deja vu all over again. It seems like topics go around and around, Alan. We have a new one this week, and it's a big one.
Well, you're exactly right, David. There ain't nothing new under the sun, because politicians are politicians. Their characters are their characters. They want to acquire power. And we often have a sort of an off-putting of the question of how do you run a government and do it well, as opposed to what's political. Now, George Washington, the first president, in his farewell address, warned about this business of factions, and meaning political parties. He was right, of course, and we see the chickens come home now in this country, in the legislature. It just never stops. The poison is here. Unless we can figure out some way to get rid of it, we're in trouble.
Well, some high praise this week for the state attorney general. A $13 billion settlement that he had a lot to do with nationally against J.P. Morgan Chase. And the news, $1 billion coming to New York State. You spoke with him on your Capital Connection program this week, a wide-ranging conversation, not just on the settlement, but what's next and even his own ambitions.
Well, you know, he's an interesting guy, but he's a sort of, I don't know how to describe him, he's sort of a button-down type. This is not a guy who is going to get terribly emotional or in your face. So here's the problem. If the tree falls in the woods and nobody knows it, it didn't happen, they say. Here's Eric Schneiderman, who wants it known in the worst possible way that he's the one who started all of this, or was in the very first group that started all of this by going after groups like J.P. Morgan and others. And now he says he's doing more than that. The problem is that the U.S. Attorney General is getting all the credit for it, makes the announcement. It's a multi-billion-dollar settlement, but $1 billion of that, as a reward for the Attorney General, the state Attorney General doing this, is coming to New York State. The problem is that most people don't know that he did it. So he has made the rounds to everybody. And they put him here, they put him everywhere else. And he came in and he gave a very good accounting of himself that, in fact, told the story of how he got started on this and how the president put him on the committee that was looking at all of this and how he delivered $1 billion to New York State. Now, we know that in the past there have been some frosty relations between the governor, Andrew Cuomo, and Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller, and the attorney general. And what we see happening here is that the attorney general and the comptroller have made common cause on a number of things. But the day, coincidentally, the very day that the $1 billion award to New York was being touted, we saw a gubernatorial announcement that the governor wanted to cut taxes in New York State by that same $1 billion. Well, I asked the attorney general about that, and he said, nonsense, it really wasn't, didn't happen that way. That $1 billion is spoken for as a term, as a part of the settlement. But worth watching, and it has opened the eyes of more than a few people around New York.
He also made some interesting comments, Alan, about the Moreland Act Commission.
That's right. As you know, Mr. Schneiderman, the attorney general, is partially responsible for basically deputizing the Moreland Act Commission people as assistant attorney generals. That gives them the right to go after the legislature. Now, that extended their jurisdiction because under the state constitution, the Moreland Act can only look at the executive branch and some of the other things that go on in New York, but not at the legislature, which is a separate branch of government. By Schneiderman cooperating with the governor, it extends into the legislature. Now, Schneiderman, of course, knows the legislature because he was in it and is a guy who I suspect was disenchanted by some of the politics he saw when he was in the Senate. So Schneiderman now is, it seems to me, I may be wrong, backpedaling on this, saying, well, you know, the Moreland Act Commission, which everybody had high expectations for, they were going to blow the top off of the legislature, they're going to blow the top off money. Schneiderman is now saying, well, you know, their job is to do a report. Oh, boy. We've had a lot of reports in New York State, and the amount of dust that they're gathering on them is immense. So if, in fact, it has been decided that the Moreland Act Commission is not going to blow the top off things, is going to write a report, and that report is going to go on that well-known shelf. That means, I suspect, that a lot of people from the governor on down are backing off.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Scharr talked. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The North Country Alliance for Public Education recently hosted a forum on standardized tests on the Plattsburgh State campus to discuss the controversial Common Core requirements and the impact of testing on students, teachers, and parents. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
It was standing room only in the largest lecture hall on the Plattsburgh State campus as teachers, parents, and students came to hear about or express their opinion over New York's standardized testing requirements. SUNY Plattsburgh Professor of Education Doug Selwyn was an organizer of the Our Children Are More Than a Score forum. He notes that the gathering was planned before Commissioner King and Common Core became a statewide focus. Selwyn says it coalesced due to building concerns over the Common Core, race to the top, increasing private corporate influence on public education, and how decisions regarding education are made.
One certainly is the testing and the fact that the testing is not good assessment. The Common Core, which was developed mostly with Gates money and other private money, there's been no piloting. It's developmentally inappropriate. It's putting teachers in an impossible place.
The session began with comments from a 7-member panel led by 114th District Assemblywoman Republican Janet Dupree. She says Common Core is a good concept that has been rushed through and poorly implemented.
I think it should be phased in a better way. I think we've got to take a deep breath and really evaluate the entire system. I have made the statement, and I've made it several times, that I think the State Education Department is the most dysfunctional department in the state of New York, and it should be the least.
SUNY Plattsburgh Associate Professor Mark Beetham, who specializes in adolescent education and visits local schools, says he is seeing a negative impact from standardized test mandates.
I see the stress levels increasing. It seems to be about rote memorization and a loss of interest, a loss of curiosity, and a sense of drudgery. We're here to churn out data for tests or reports.
Among the panelists was Saranac High School student Sophia Stevens. The ninth grader wrote a model test that mocks the actual New York State standardized test. It went viral on the web and was profiled in the Washington Post.
There was a reading passage that I made, and it was just explaining how students feel. And then I made example questions to go along with the reading passage. It was fun to make, actually.
So how bad is it regarding testing?
It's tough. We even take tests at the beginning of the year on stuff we haven't learned yet.
What do you want the state to do?
Definitely reduce the number of tests. I mean, of course, we need tests, but less is definitely a necessity.
Doug Selwyn reports there is one particular irritant, which was reflected in many of the comments during the forum.
One of the things that makes it really difficult to know what's going on is the teachers and administrators have been pressured and or ordered not to talk about this. So part of what we're trying to do with this forum is to create a space where we can have these conversations that we need to have to talk together about what can we do to support our children, what can we do to support our public schools.
For over an hour, parents, teachers, and students stepped up to vent their frustration, with few expressing support for Common Core.
I'd like to actually thank Commissioner King, the Board of Regents, State Education, for awakening the sleeping giant.
I had ninth grade boys last year crying in my classroom because of being overtested, because they felt dumb, because they knew for sure that they were never going to be able to graduate from high school.
I'm a senior at Plattsburgh High School.
I'm a sophomore at PHS.
It sucks that the teachers are kind of being graded on our grades, because I feel like I'm never really learning anything.
We jam for the test, we take the test, and then we don't touch that anymore.
So overall, it's pretty much, we might look smart on paper because we are passing all of our tests, but we don't really feel smart.
New York State Education Commissioner John King is in Scroon Lake this afternoon. This evening at 7:30, New York State Board of Regents Chancellor Merrill Tisch will join King for a panel discussion on Common Core standards in the studios of Mountain Lake Public Television in Plattsburgh.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
State legislators, private school administrators, and others this week addressed a crowd of some 5,000 elementary through high school students at a rally in Westchester County. The goal was to drum up support for state legislation to provide tax credits for investments in education. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
Who Instagrams? Woo! Okay, now I don't know if they took their devices away from you when you came in, but if they didn't, I want you to Instagram right now to the assembly and tell them to pass this bill to as soon as we go back to Albany.
That's Democratic State Senator Ruth Hassel Thompson, whose district includes Mount Vernon in Westchester. She is a co-sponsor of the bill that passed the Senate. An assembly version with more than 100 sponsors awaits legislators when they return to Albany for the legislative session that begins in January. Students from more than 60 schools in Westchester, Putnam, and Rockland counties attended the multi-faith rally. Leader of the Senate's Independent Democratic Conference, Jeff Klein, addressed the crowd, which also included students from his area, the Bronx.
If we decide to have a bunch of buses, if we decide to have a trip in Albany, so you can come up to Albany, you can talk to your legislators, you can let them know how important this choice is, would you come?
He says the Education Investment Tax Credit Bill is among his top priorities.
This is definitely one of my priorities. This is too important to let go. We need to give relief to people who are choking on private tuition bills. They need to have a choice. And if they make a choice to send their young person to Catholic school, to a yeshiva, they need some relief. And I think government has a duty to supply them.
The Education Investment Tax Credit Bill would allow a dollar-for-dollar state tax credit for donations to public schools, school districts, and teacher-driven projects. The bill would also provide scholarships to help low- and middle-income students attend religious and other tuition-based schools. State Senator David Carlucci is an independent Democrat from Rockland County.
This is a smart approach. It's thinking outside the box to leverage private dollars to go towards both public schools and private schools. And that's what's important. We can't continue to fully rely on property taxpayers to fund the bill. And this is a smart way to say, hey, a donation towards our education system, whether it's towards public school or private school, is one that we need to value in New York State.
Helene Schoenbrunn is a White Plains resident who has put two of her kids through Westchester Day School in Mamaroneck, a private Jewish school. Her third child is in fifth grade there at a cost just shy of $20,000. She says the financial strain is great, especially for middle-class families.
In a sense, it's not even really a choice for many observant Jews. We really feel compelled, and it's something that's part of our, you know, that's something that we've always expected to do.
She says the cost of private school affects decisions about family planning.
As my husband likes to say, day school tuition is the best Jewish birth control. That's the sad joke.
For some of his district's public schools, Carlucci sees the bill as providing assistance without raising property taxes.
I know I've got many struggling school districts that I represent that are constantly trying to say, hey, we need another tool to help fight to make sure that we can save important programs. And that's why I think this will be tremendously important.
Supporters say the investment would help fund arts, music, and sports programs and reimburse teachers up to $100 for money spent on classroom supplies. Of the proposed up to $300 million in tax credits per year, at least one half would be set aside to increase donations to public schools and their teachers. The Invest in Education rally was co-sponsored by Catholic, Jewish, and Lutheran groups, including the Jewish Education Project, Lutheran Schools Association, and the Archdiocese of New York. Cardinal Timothy Dolan appeared on a big screen with a videotaped message.
I applaud your efforts, and I look forward to the day when we can celebrate a victory in Albany. Not a victory just for us personally, but for all our children and all of our families who so passionately want an even better education.
Supporters of the bill count among their critics the State Teachers Union, which they say has traditionally opposed helping children attend parochial schools through charitably funded scholarships using a state tax credit. The Westchester rally followed one held in April in Buffalo.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Data Quality Campaign, a Washington, D.C. nonprofit that advocates for high-quality data, has released a paper showing how far states have come in developing and using the data. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas found out New York got good grades.
Data for Action 2013 gathered information via a number known as a unique identifier that is assigned to students entering a school system, which enables data tracking. Students' identities remain anonymous. All K-12 public school students have had such a number since 2006. Unique identifiers help gauge student progress, assist policymakers, and help teachers better understand student needs. Amy Gadara is executive director of the Data Quality Campaign, which has been evaluating states' data use since 2005.
Teachers in 35 states now have access to data about the students in their classroom. This is an increase from 28 states in 2011. When you think about this, this is the whole goal when you, at the end of the day, about having this data at teachers' fingertips, that they can personalize it and they can make sure that every kid in their class is mastering content and is competent in reaching the standards set out for those students. One of the areas that, again, states are making progress in, but not as quickly as they are with providing information to teachers, is ensuring that parents have access to this information as well. We have only 14 states this year that can ensure that parents have access to this information. And we believe, though, that this will be an area that more and more states will be focusing on now that teachers have access to this as well.
The report places New York in a leadership role when it comes to using student data for making local and state education policy decisions. New York has taken 7 actions to ensure effective data use compared to 3 last year. Gadara understands there are student privacy issues, but urges parents not to opt out of the data tracking process.
You know, if you choose not to vaccinate your kid, you're not only hurting, you possibly are hurting your own kid, but in addition, you may be, by opting out of that, being at risk for the whole system and causing the whole system to spend more money, time, and energy on something. And I think that there are great analogies between those two situations.
Billy Easton with the Alliance for Quality Education shares his concerns.
The big issue around data collection is the grave concerns about student privacy. There is a company called InBloom, which is building a database and is collecting all kinds of private data on students, including their personal email addresses, their personal health information. And all that's going into the state education department database and then is marketed to other vendors. So there's a huge problem with the lack of privacy around this sort of data collection system.
Gadara believes the data can help teachers personalize learning and degrees. Privacy and security must be maintained. She stresses student data is protected and parents should be granted access.
What is in the state data system on your kid? How do you look at it and get a sense of it? And, you know, what are the policies for destruction? What's part of a permanent record? What's not? I know that many of the conversations in New York are also about that in terms of who makes decisions on this, where does this reside, who has access to this information, and what are the privacy and security provisions. We'll be putting out more and more information on that in the next couple months as well, but we've also got some great documents that could be useful to you on our website under the safeguarding data section.
There's a link to that section and to the report at wamc.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1347 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.